Welcome to Feed Your Dog Facts, the internet's number one resource for fighting pet food industry misinformation and promoting evidence-based pet care. Now, here are your hosts, Daniel Shuloff and Alexis Malone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Feed Your Dog Facts, FYDF Friday. My name is Alexis Malone. I am your host. I'm alongside Daniel Shuloff. He is the CEO and founder of Keto Natural Pet Foods. Daniel, always a pleasure to see you. And also hoping you can tell us what we're going to be talking about today.
Pleasure to see you, always too. Today's topic is DCM once again. You know, obviously we've done a lot of DCM content in recent weeks and months, given the lawsuit. But today we're going to do a specific thing where we highlight the four most important things that pet owners need to know about the present state of the DCM issue, the DCM controversy, as of the time that we're recording this episode, which is March of 24. We don't know how things are going to change going forward, but I think we can do a really clear and concise and helpful summary of four really important things that if you're a pet parent trying to understand the significance of DCM for how you think about what to feed your dog and how to talk about this issue with other people, kind of the four things that are most important to remember as of right now. And if things change in the future, then we'll update, put out new shows. We record all the time. And so we'll be able to do that. So, but these are four really clear things that we can say that are true, verifiable as of right now.
Like you said, we'll continue to cover this topic. We do also have a previous episode, DCM 101. So our listeners and viewers can also go back and tune into that if you just want a more in-depth understanding of what DCM is, because we're not really going to be touching too much on that today.
Right. Yeah, okay, that's great. Right.
So you mentioned four different things.
Okay, so let's do a quick overview and then we'll go say a little bit more about each one. So number one, if you're listening to this show and you're familiar with what DCM already is, like, you know, this is kind of framed up in a way that like assumes that you've already listened to the 101 episode and you come into this with a rough understanding of what DCM is as a disease and what the broader like conversation around DCM has been in the pet food world over the past 5 or 6 years. If you're coming from that kind of place, then you already know that part of the reason there's any kind of controversy around DCM is that the United States Food and Drug Administration has played a role in trying to understand this disease over that period of time. The FDA's investigation has been part of the reason this has been such a popular and like kind of hot button issue. So the first thing to know about the present state of the DCM controversy is that the FDA has essentially ended its investigation, and it has done so because based on the evidence that it has at its disposal, as of the end of 22 is when they said this stuff, it has no evidence that grain-free or BEG or anything, kind any terms that are like that, products containing specific ingredients that contain legumes, cause DCM. Right now, as we record this episode, that's the FDA's perspective on the state of the evidence. It's looked at the studies that have been put out. It's looked at the case reports that have been submitted to it by pet owners around the country. And it said, yeah, we see nothing here that suggests that these diets cause this disease. Number two, beyond what the FDA has said in its statement, there's also no evidence that DCM is correlated with either DCM incidence rates are correlated, higher DCM incidence rates are correlated with BEG diets, or that worse DCM outcomes, that the things like lifespan that get worse when a dog is fed a BEG diet as compared to a non-BEG one. So that's to say, kind of in simple terms, it's like the FDA has said very clearly there's no evidence of causation, but in addition, there's no evidence of correlation either. And when we go into these specific different like comments, I'll try to explain why those are two different statements, what the FDA has said, and then the broader statement that I've made about correlation. The third thing that all pet owners need to know about the present state of the DCM controversy is not only is there no evidence that BEG diets cause or are correlated with this disease, there's recently been a lawsuit filed that we've played a major role in that alleges that the whole reason that anyone, particularly the veterinary community, but also the lay public, thinks that there is any kind of scientific evidence that BEG diets play a role in causing DCM is because of a fraudulent scheme, because of fraud committed by a cluster of defendants in the lawsuit, which notably include a company called Hill's Pet Nutrition, as well as two affiliated nonprofits that are affiliated with Hill's Pet Nutrition, and five specific research veterinarians who've put out science concerning DCM and did a variety of other things relating to that. So in essence, the first notable thing to know about DCM and the second notable thing are about the lack of evidence suggesting that it has anything to do with BEG diets. The third is that there's a lawsuit alleging that despite that lack of evidence, people believe there is evidence because of fraud committed by the defendants in the lawsuit, which include Hill's Pet Nutrition. And then the fourth thing that pet owners need to know about DCM as of the spring of 2024, this is a real and very serious disease that can in fact be caused or exacerbated by nutritional qualities. And the scientific community understands quite well what those nutritional qualities really are. They're just nothing to do with BEG diets, okay? So it's not to say anything to take away from the seriousness of DCM as a disease or the idea that nutrition has nothing to do with it. Nutrition definitely has to do with DCM, but BEG diets do not. So those are the four things at a high level.
I can't wait to circle back around to that last one because I feel like especially if you're a pet specialty retailer, just understanding that there is a lawsuit that is currently happening, but then also understanding that diet is important. You need to understand exactly what causes DCM, but we'll dive into that a little bit later. So circling back around, so cause, that was point number one. FDA's investigation, essentially they came out December 2022 and they said, found no evidence. Can you dive into that a little bit more? I mean, 2022, that was a while ago at this point.
Yeah, that's right. But the investigation started even longer. You know, it started in the summer of 2018. So this investigation was pending for more than 4 years. And we can pull up maybe a screenshot that shows the actual language that I'm talking about when I say the FDA has announced that it's ended this investigation. What's important to note as you look at this language, like any responsible public health authority, the FDA is certainly leaving the door open to the idea. It's not saying like we're never looking at this again. The truth has been determined and we refuse to come back to this no matter what happens in the future. It's like, no, that's not what it's saying. You can still continue to submit case reports about DCM to the FDA. And if those reports come in and show certain kinds of patterns, the organization might very well issue an update that says, we're reopening this. The evidence has changed and so our belief has changed. But as of the very, very end, December 23rd of 2022, the FDA said, look, we're not going to be issuing any new updates about this investigation. And the reason for that is as of this point, 4.5, almost 5 years after beginning this investigation, we have found no evidence that grain-free or legume-containing or BEG diets cause DCM. That's a strong and very important statement to understand. The FDA has, and it plenty of times, announced that it has found evidence that a specific product or a class of products do cause diseases or other bad health outcomes. The most notable one recently concerns a company we've referenced earlier in this podcast, Hill's Pet Nutrition. During the pendency of the DCM investigation, Hill's inadvertently produced a bunch of pet food products that contained absurdly high levels of vitamin D. And vitamin D is acutely toxic for dogs if you get above certain quantities. And so dogs were eating these products and getting incredibly sick and dying. The FDA became aware of it. And the FDA very clearly issued commentary that said in no uncertain terms, these products cause this problem. So it's not that like there's anything about the FDA's announcement that is like, well, look, they're saying we don't have any evidence that it causes it, but that's a very high standard to meet. And so actually, this is kind of a meaningless statement. It's like, no, this is very much what they're in the business of doing. And they've said in no uncertain terms, having looked at the dozens of studies that the defendants in the lawsuit have put out since the FDA announced this investigation, they've very rightly said, none of these studies show that these products cause this disease. The FDA is basing its statement when it says that on two different buckets of evidence, right? There is the scientific evidence that has been produced by the scientific community. That's like the studies that get published in peer-reviewed journals that summarize an interesting experiment that's been performed. And if the results of those kind of experiments suggest one thing or another, they influence the thinking of, you know, public health authorities over whether the science has established one fact or another. So the FDA is saying on the one hand, there's none of that that shows that DCM is caused by these any of these kinds of diets. But it's actually saying something else as well, which is saying that the FDA itself hasn't received case reports that constitute evidence of causation here. And nobody put out a study that in a peer-reviewed journal, they looked at whether Hill's products contained more vitamin D and then asked the FDA to look at the peer-reviewed record. It made its statements about the fact that those products were causing that problem based on the case reports that were being submitted to the FDA by concerned pet owners around the country. It's like one of the functions that the agency performs is they have these portals on the website and otherwise where you can be like, my dog ate this product and it got this disease, FYI. And then the FDA takes all those case reports and looks for patterns. And if the patterns exist, you know, rise to the level of demonstrating a strong correlation between one product and one disease outcome, then that's evidence of correlation to the FDA. So like the FDA is not just looking at the peer review record. They conducted their own independent investigation. And as we detail in our lawsuit, it was hugely corrupted by malfeasance committed by the defendants. That like how they influenced improperly the FDA's investigation is a major component of the lawsuit. The FDA made a statement before the lawsuit even existed. So like the FDA was already saying like, despite whatever these people did, even that, there's no evidence that these products cause this disease. No one has more authority that's looked at this issue than the FDA. You know, there might, I don't know anybody there specifically to be able to comment on their specific knowledge, but like there's no body that's more credible than the FDA in this. They're like, we're going to take this on. We're going to investigate this. We found nothing.
Yeah. And I think too, like you'll see, you know, when we put the statement up, the viewers can read it for themselves. But essentially one of the things that I found interesting too was that, you know, they mentioned that they're unable to investigate every single report, but they've gathered enough information to be able to come out with this statement. That was one thing that just caught my attention.
Like there was also no evidence a month or like a day after it announced its investigation. They didn't just come out then and say, well, we have no evidence that these products cause this disease because they hadn't like completed a meaningful investigation yet. Now they've gotten hundreds of case reports about this disease, been all kinds of peer-reviewed journals. They've been actively promoting the idea that they want pet owners to tell them about DCM and their dogs. And so now they've got the kind of body of knowledge they can say, look, we're not closing the door to this, but based on this voluminous stuff that's been put together thus far, we see nothing.
Keeping the door open, like you mentioned. Okay, going on to point number two, no evidence that BEG, and if you can just again define BEG one more time, BEG foods are correlated with DCM.
So BEG means boutique exotic ingredient or grain-free pet food. It's a class of products that one of the defendants in the lawsuit, a veterinarian named Lisa Freeman, who is a professor at Tufts University, she came up with it and she started kind of using it to describe the products that she was falsely claiming were linked with this disease. And so it's sometimes a part of the discourse and sometimes not. Like it didn't really get picked up. The FDA never started using the term, but some people talk about it, depending on who you get your information from. And so BEG, grain-free, whatever. There's no evidence that any of these classes of products are correlated with either of these two very important things. Number one, higher incidence rates of DCM, which is to say there's absolutely no evidence in the, either in what's been submitted to the FDA or what's published in the scientific record, dogs fed these diets get DCM at higher rates than dogs not fed these diets. That is not a thing. Number two, and equally important, there is no evidence of BG diets being correlated with another big important group of outcomes, which is worse disease progression in dogs that have DCM. So if dogs have DCM and they're being fed a grain-free diet, do they do better if you switch them off that diet and do nothing else? There's no evidence of that either, or vice versa. If you have a dog that has DCM and is on a traditional diet and you switch it onto a BG one, there's no evidence that it does worse than if you just keep it on a traditional diet in the first instance. This is a big part of the lawsuit because it's a nuanced and hard to like get your head around type of issue. If you go into this episode with some degree of familiarity with the DCM controversy, and if you fancy yourself a reasonably scientifically literate person, for instance, if you are a practicing clinical veterinarian or a veterinary technician or anyone else who thinks they, who's like, I know how the scientific community works. It's often the case that when I say this to people, they like, no, that's just wrong. That's just like dead wrong. You're totally wrong about that. What are you talking about? There have been dozens of studies put out. And the reality is, yes, dozens of studies have been put out by the folks who are the defendants in this lawsuit about DCM and BEG or grain-free or some other related subset of diets. But none of those has actually found either of those two really important things. None of those studies have found that dogs get this disease more frequently if they're fed one of these diets than if not. And none of them have found that dogs do worse if they have DCM, if they're switched onto one of these diets, or do better if they're switched off of them. The only like important caveat to that to be noted, because sometimes people will say, what about, there's kind of like two or three papers where at first glance, you look at it and you're like, well, wait a second. This says diet change associated with better outcomes in dogs fed BG diets with DCM. What the reality is when you look at the actual findings, that's just sneaky language. We detail this in the lawsuit. There's kind of four specific types of like sneaky language that are used to get around the, like to suggest that there is correlation between either higher incidence rates or worse clinical outcomes and BEG diets, when in reality there isn't. As we'll get to in point four here, DCM is a disease that has been around, like the veterinary community has known about for a long time. We've known that certain nutritional qualities will make it worse and make it better for a long time. And so there are treatments, including nutritional ones, that have been used to treat DCM for a long time. There are a cluster of studies that are from this group that are all defendants in the lawsuit. Dogs fed BEG diets that have DCM were analyzed, and some of them were switched off of BEG diets and given treatments that have already long been established as being efficacious for getting rid of DCM or improving DCM outcomes. And another group was never switched off of them. And lo and behold, the dogs that were treated for this disease ended up doing better. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, that's great that they were treated and that happened. That is not evidence that the diet did something. We had a struggle to come up with an analogy when describing this in the lawsuit. And the one we ultimately settled on is kind of goofy. It's one we went with, so I guess we liked it. If you conduct a study and you have a bunch of smokers and you tell them, like tell one group of them, okay, well, you're going to stop wearing hats and stop smoking. And we're going to see if you tend to get less lung cancer, live longer or not than the group that continued wearing hats and smoking. And if you look at those two things, you're going to find out that the people who quit smoking and stopped wearing hats lived longer, because smoking obviously causes, we know now, causes lung cancer. It doesn't mean that any serious scientist would come to the conclusion that the key correlation there is between improvement in the disease outcome and the hat thing. It's like if you have something that you know is going to improve clinical outcomes that's also mixed into it, that's the explanation for any kind of change in the pattern that you're seeing. That's super nuanced. If you want like a good place as we get into the material about the lawsuit. This phenomenon, including an in-depth write-up of each one of the relevant studies, can be found in the complaint that is like the basis of the lawsuit. It's paragraphs, I think, 85 through 92. And you can see exactly what I'm talking about in much more eloquent, thoughtful, considered prose than you're getting here.
Yeah. And I think this too just brings it back to language and how important language is. It's like, of course, if you have any scientist in the room, they're going to be able to understand and distinguish. But unfortunately, when you're someone from the public who has, you know, has done a little bit of research online about what I should feed my dog, what I shouldn't, but then you go into your vet office, there's not just a statement of saying like grain-free diets do not cause DCM, period. It's so like, so I just think my point is that I think language is so important when it comes to talking about this issue, but also for the general public to be able to understand, yeah, what should I know about DCM?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Like a big part of the reason that despite the evidentiary record in this case, you have millions of people around the country right now has been shown through scientific research to be correlated with these bad outcomes that you want to try to, BG diets correlated with these bad outcomes that you want to avoid is because imprecise language has been used to sort of fudge the findings in a lot of cases. So when the folks who are defendants in our lawsuit have talked about their own scientific findings, what you'll hear them say all the time is, well, this shows that these diets and this disease are associated.
Yes.
Which in the scientific community is something that taken to mean correlation. That's the only kind of association other than a causal association that's like scientifically significant. Arguably, if you're like coming at it from the wrong perspective, if you're not thinking about what this word means in the scientific community, and you're just sort of not sufficiently expert to be screening this stuff out, you can take that to mean something broader. And if it's taken to mean something broader, you could just about see how somebody would publish it, even though it's false. Again, a nuanced issue that's teased out in the lawsuit, but it's a big part of the explanation for like why this is a thing at all that we're talking about in 2024 is that like use of imprecise language as opposed to typical vocabulary of professional science has played a role in this turning into a big social thing.
And so you've given an overview of the lawsuit. We also have our last podcast episode goes and dives a little bit deeper if you're interested in listening. Let's move on because I know that we're a little strapped for time today. So let's move on to our final point that pet parents should know about DCM.
Quickly on the lawsuit, we have talked about that in depth in another episode. If you go to the website for Keto Natural Pet Foods, you'll be able to find the complaint in the lawsuit, some media that's been written about it, explainer article that I put together that runs down and provides a little bit of a summary of what's otherwise a really long document. But yeah, the basic take home is there's a lawsuit that's a class action suit that we have filed against Hill's Pet Nutrition, 2 affiliated nonprofit entities, 5 affiliated veterinarians, alleging that they fraudulently caused the DCM investigation, both by misrepresenting stuff to the FDA that induced the FDA to launch its investigation in the first instance, and by cherry-picking the cases that it sent to the FDA, by misstating scientific facts in the scientific record and in the public, like lay media, and a cluster of other related kinds of malfeasance. Not just is there no evidence that these diets cause this disease, as the FDA has said, point number one, not only is there no evidence that this disease and these diets are correlated with one another, but number three, the reason that anybody in this day and age thinks anything to the contrary is, according to the allegations in our lawsuit, because of fraud, because there's deliberate misleading going on for the interest of a commercial party. And so then the fourth issue, everybody should know about DCM as of March 2024, is that this is a real disease with real nutritional qualities that have been shown through scientific experimentation to increase the risk of it or exacerbate the progression. Long before there was an FDA investigation into DCM, the scientific community already knew a great deal about what nutritional qualities will tend to increase the risk of this disease. And specifically, what they knew is that you have to make sure that a dog absorbs enough of two specific amino acids. Amino acids are often called the building blocks of protein. They're like a subclass of proteins, and they come in a bunch of different flavors. The flavors fall into two buckets, what are called essential amino acids and what are called inessential amino acids. Something is an inessential amino acid if your body or your dog's body makes it on its own. If it can make it on its own, it's not essential that it gets it through the diet. Quintessential example in the doggy world for a long time has been taurine is considered an inessential amino acid. And that's because if you feed a dog enough other essential amino acids, its body will make taurine all on its own. Whereas on the other hand, cats haven't evolved that mechanism to the same, nearly the same extent. And so in cats, taurine is considered an essential amino acid, something that you need to make sure the animal absorbs through its diet in sufficient quantities in order to prevent a deficiency disease. And the specific deficiency disease that arises if there's not enough taurine in the animal's body is DCM, okay? That's what the scientific community has known for a long time, that if you don't feed a dog enough of the essential amino acids that its body uses to make taurine, it'll increase the risk that the animal gets DCM. Those two amino acids are called cysteine and methionine. Because there's this body of research, the folks that regulate the sale of pet food in the United States require all pet food products to contain a certain amount of cysteine and methionine in order to be blessed as what are called complete and balanced pet foods. That's a designation that the regulatory body that governs the sale of pet food in the US has come up with that essentially means you can feed the dog just this and no supplements or anything like that, and it won't get any deficiency diseases. So it's got enough, but not too much of vitamin D or calcium, or as the case may be, cysteine and methionine. You have to include those things because they have been found to be essential for dogs, because if you don't feed them enough of it, they will develop DCM. And that's been around since forever. Not since forever, that's an overstatement, but since long before the FDA began its investigation of grain-free diets. And so it's really important to know that, like, nobody, myself least of all, is saying that DCM is not a real disease. Oh, DCM is a very real disease. It kills dogs, and it's sad as all holy hell. It's also not the case that anybody here is saying that, no, nutrition has nothing to do with DCM. That's not a thing. No, there very much are. If you want to give a dog for some horrible reason, if you want to give an animal this disease, you can basically do that. You can certainly increase the risk significantly. Just take all the cysteine and methionine out of its diet. And over time, it won't produce enough taurine and its heart muscles will begin to show the signs of DCM. There's nothing that says that those types of nutrients, those amino acids, are found in different quantities in grain-free BEG diets. And if anything, it's like the implication is to the contrary. Animal meat products are typically composed heavily of protein. And protein is made up of its building blocks, which are amino acids. And so the products that tend to have the most cysteine and methionine tend to be the products that have the most meat-based protein in them. And one thing that the non-BEG diets, so the products made by companies like Hill's Pet Nutrition, what they like to call traditional diets for dogs, one thing that they all have in common is they tend not to have a great deal of meat-based protein in them. They have enough protein in them to meet the requirements that the regulatory body sets for protein content, but not much more than that. If you are a shopper who's like, I'm a one-issue shopper, I want to feed a product with as much meat-based protein as possible, the top 10 for you do not include the traditional diets made by companies like Hill's Pet Nutrition, where you tend to find about half the protein as the highest protein products, complete balance products that are being sold in the US. I'm very sensitive about DCM. I want to make sure that my dog's diet does not give it DCM. Great. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to look for a product that has as much cysteine and methionine in an absorbable fashion as possible. And a really good proxy for that is how much meat-based protein is in this thing. The more, the better. And if you feed your dog a diet with as much meat-based protein as possible, it's a reasonably good way to ensure that it's getting a lot of cysteine and methionine. Whereas if you feed it a diet that's like just barely got more protein than the requirements suggest,
or none, no protein,
in order for a diet to be sold as complete and balanced in the US, it's got to have some amount, but it's like the bare minimum. And so like if it's barely clearing that hurdle, you're not giving yourself much wiggle room. Whereas if you feed something that's got twice as much protein as AFCO says is the absolute minimum that a dog needs, you're giving yourself the kind of buffer zone, the kind of wiggle room to ensure that all that stuff's getting absorbed within the body. Like it's not the case that all nutrients are absorbed at the same rates. Like a lot of that depends on how much of other types of nutrients are present alongside them. So like the amount of fiber in a diet will influence the rate and percentage of absorption of these other important micronutrients during digestion. And so like to provide yourself the maximum buffer zone there, there are things you can very straightforward, commonsensical things you can do to ensure that you give your dog the kind of nutritional profile that's unlikely to increase the risk of DCM. Like any serious study of the disease and its potential links to nutrition at this point in time goes through that mechanism, starting with, okay, we know that this is a dietary quality that tends to impact the dog's heart in these kind of negative ways. What are the implications of this? Teasing out the edges of it, understanding, well, maybe there are specific combinations with other nutrients that decrease or increase digestibility. And so that might influence. That kind of stuff is like good faith science on this. Anything where you try to make broader generalizations about whole big classes of products where none of that stuff is held consistent is not good faith science. That's the kind of stuff that gave rise to this controversy, but it's not really an effort to try to understand the truth about this disease.
Okay, so I'm a pet parent. Now I know my four things that I should know about DCM in 2024. If I have follow-up questions for you, where should I go?
You can certainly email us at the show. And I take pride in the fact that we do a really good job of responding to every question that we get via email. You can do the same thing if you go to the website for my company, Keto Natural Pet Foods. There's easy ways to get in touch with us there, social media, email, submitting a form on the website, whatever. And again, I think we do a really good job about making sure that we get back to everybody that reaches out with a good faith issue about it. Happy to take any kinds of questions. If there are things that seem like there maybe are broader significance to the listenership for the show, maybe we'll talk about it on the show. Or, you know, we've talked about the idea of putting together an FAQ episode about DCM. You know, if people are submitting questions about the lawsuit and that kind of thing, maybe we can do that. But for now, any of those are good ways to get in touch with us.
Yeah, I think another thing that you do really well also is that we always encourage people to do their own research. So this should give you an overview. But if you want to dive into the science, if you want to look at the lawsuit and read that, we will link that all in the show notes. So that way you have access to everything. All right, Dan, anything else that you'd like to touch on before we say goodbye for the weekend?
No, I don't think so. I think there will be, if you prefer, I mean, if you've gotten to this point, then you certainly like the podcast and video medium. But if you like to get your stuff in written form, there will be an article that summarizes this same body of information in textual form that we'll make available as well. Other than that, be in touch with any feedback, questions, comments, anything like that.
I feel like it'll be an awesome cheat sheet too for pet retailers.
Yeah, exactly. There are these kind of folks who are getting asked this question all the time. What do I need to know about DCM? This is what I think is the most important stuff to keep in mind, that's most impactful.
Man has it evolved, which we are very thankful to you for. So, all right, everyone, enjoy your weekend and we'll be back in a couple weeks.